June night on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. We have comedian Paul Farvar with food from Weber Grill celebrating 15 years here in Chicago. And it's New Music Monday with Valentine Bennett. And now, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here in Chicago, Illinois, here she is, Patty Vasquez.
Thank you for joining us pretty late. It is Monday, September 11th, and I know a lot of people have been reflecting on what this day means to them, where they were, how they felt. It really stirs a lot of emotions, and there's no arguing that the world was changed 16 years ago, and it's amazing because, you know, my son is 14, and we've talked about 9/11 throughout his life here and there. We've when he was old enough to kind of understand. And when we felt confident enough to explain how the United States was attacked, you know, we've definitely had discussions about it. But now as a teenager and knowing more about the world, today was kind of interesting having that conversation and really actually showing him where we were, what we went through. But I mean, you know, we also had that feeling of like, well, what I went through is nothing like what the thousands of people who died that day, men and women who never came home to their families, children who were killed, and our first responders. I was fortunate enough to visit both the Pentagon and where the World Trade Centers were. There are amazing memorials there. If you ever have the opportunity to go there, I highly encourage you to go. I know many people think of the World Trade Center first. The Pentagon Memorial is amazing. There are these beautiful benches there are some that face away from the Pentagon, and those each bench is in memory of each person that was inside the Pentagon who died. And then there are benches that face the Pentagon, and those are in memoriam to each person that was on the incoming plane that died. Each one has a small reflecting pond under it. And when I was lucky enough to visit that memorial, it was actually September 11, 2013, and there were many soldiers who were there, and I was struck by the image of men and women who, you know, were perhaps, just kids when 9/11 happened, and were now serving our country, many of them, you know, serving perhaps in places that we've been drawn to because of the events of 9/11. And there's just so much to consider. There's so much to reflect on. You know, how much have we really moved on as a country? How much have we learned? What do we need to continue to understand as to what happened on September 11th? We are going to talk in a moment with Christopher Kelly, who is a historian and author of America Invaded, who will talk to us about the heroism of Flight 93, the citizen warriors, and so many other stories that I think we really need to remember. And, you know, this is something that we want. It's not just about learning. It's about what do we do? What have we done in the years since September 11th as Americans? And what can we continue to do? More after this on 720 WGN. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. It is September 11th, at least still in Chicago. I know that some of you are listening on the East Coast, and perhaps you spent the day or part of the day reflecting on the events of September 11th, 2001. Joining me on the line is author and historian Christopher Kelly, who has written America Invaded. And Christopher, first of all, let me introduce you to my friend Paul Farvar, who's in studio with me tonight. How are you doing, Christopher?
Good, Patty. Great to be with you tonight.
Excellent. First of all, tell us a little bit about your background as a historian, because I feel that these days historians somehow are more important than they have been in the last several decades. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm the author of 4 books. I write mainly about military history. Mm-hmm. My first was called America Invades, which was talking about American military involvement around the world, with a chapter in every country from Afghanistan to Zimbabwe. My most recent book is called America Invaded, which is a state-by-state guide to fighting on American soil. Our intention was to ultimately deliver a 360-degree view of Americans fighting abroad and fighting at home between the two books.
In this book, you focus on Flight 93. Is that correct?
Well, we have a chapter on every state in the Union, and of course, Pennsylvania we do discuss Flight 93, where the fighting, the subtitle is Fighting on American Soil. And Flight 93 wasn't exactly fighting on the soil, but it was fighting, of course, in the airspace above Pennsylvania. So, you know, close enough for our purposes.
In that story, what kind of sources do you have? Because, of course, we know that some of the passengers were able to call home and tell them what was going on.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about how the events unfolded on Flight 93.
Sure. It began as a perfectly ordinary day with beautiful blue skies and all of that. The passengers and crew that boarded Flight 93, it was a flight on a 757 United Airlines going from Newark to San Francisco, certainly did not expect to be heroes or were thinking about that in any way. They were not a group. They were not active duty military. They were not police. They were not air marshals. They were ordinary Americans and some citizens actually from other countries, too. And they were a very diverse group. I mean, they were you had men, women, older, younger, two college kids in their 20s, a grandmother from New Jersey about trying to move back to California to be with her daughter. You had, a mix of straight and gay. You had, a mix of all kinds of different people on board that plane that day.
And obviously from the flight records, were you able to interview any of the family members related to the passengers or the crew?
You know, I didn't. I had other, published sources where we did go through and things like that. But no, I haven't had direct contact with survivors or family members.
It's an interesting place in history, isn't it? Is that crash in Shanksville, Pennsylvania? I mentioned before we took a break about the memorials at the Pentagon and at the Ground Zero for the World Trade Centers. Have you been to Shanksville? Because I have to imagine that they have a pretty remarkable memorial there as well.
I have. I was just there last week, as a matter of fact. I was at the Flight 93 Memorial. I think it's an incredible place. I mean, because I think that, I talked about the diversity of the people on board the plane and the passengers and the crew list. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's like, the motto on the coin, E pluribus unum, many into one.
Right.
We see that motto all the time, but we never think about it. But I think that the passengers and crew, they kind of lived E pluribus unum. They were many, and they came to be one. They made one. I mean, there are a lot of things we don't know about Flight 93. I mean, some things will remain murky forever because, of course, nobody survived and all of that. But there are, three things that we do know. One, we know that they voted. Two, we know that they took action. They did rush the cockpit. And three, we know that their action saved countless lives. They were only 20 minutes out from Washington, D.C., from the flight path when they went down in a abandoned strip mine in western Pennsylvania. So they're 20 minutes out, and most likely their target was the Capitol building, the White House, but most likely the Capitol building.
Yeah, no, and that was what I remember that day. There were so many different theories and ideas. People were trying to figure out how many planes were still unaccounted for as far as whether or not they were under control of the crew, whether or not terrorists had taken over other planes. When you say that they voted, tell us a little bit about that.
They had airphones, and through the airphones, they learned about the attacks earlier that day on the Twin Towers, and they'd also learned even about the attack on the Pentagon. And it was, I think, that the news of that last bit of information about the Pentagon being attacked as well that kind of put them over the edge and prompted them to act. I mean, and so I think that when they acted, they became kind of citizen soldiers, if you will.
Sure.
And for instance, when they were ultimately, when they did do a memorial service at the site, actually many months after 9/11, that they were accorded full military honors, which of course is very unusual for for civilians. And I think even today, they continue to inspire members of our military around the world and also our intelligence services who are engaged in the war on terror, even today.
And that was the thing, was that there were people who were saying goodbye to their family members, too, as they were calling and mm-hmm. finding out about, as you mentioned, the attacks.
Yes.
I mean, that what a bizarre phone call,
Yes. There are at least three recorded messages to family members where they bumped into an answering machine and left messages. One of them, they're all incredibly moving, but one lady calls one family member and tells her about the combination to her safe. I mean, so even at that point, she was thinking in terms of trying to make her passing, you know, less burdensome, to her relative. I mean, it's just incredibly selfless of what they did. I would say.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, thinking like already kind of resigning themselves. I mean, she, you know, knew what was coming next and wanted to make sure that things right. were taken care of for her family. I mean, you try to imagine, would you have the presence of mind to, you know, ensure that your family members knew what to do next and also want right. to make sure. I mean, have you thought about that, Christopher? Like, what would you say to somebody? Does that go through your mind as you're doing research on these stories?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what they did was incredible. I mean, of course, the pilot, the plane had been seized by four hijackers, and the pilot was trying to kind of waggle the wings, and the plane was actually flying upside down just prior to going into the ground in Shanksville. So it would have been incredibly difficult to actually reach the cockpit, but they somehow managed to do that. And I as a historian, I find the continuity between, you know, what happened with Flight 93 and citizen soldiers from before in our history. I mean, that you know, when I go to the Flight 93 memorial, I'm reminded, I mean, that it's not just a cemetery or memorial, it's also a battlefield, even though the battle took place up in the skies rather than on the ground. It's a battlefield like Gettysburg. So that, just like, you know, Gettysburg, we learn about what it is in part to be an American. And at Flight 93, I think we learned a similar thing, that you have like Captain John Parker, who is with the Massachusetts Militia at Lexington Green in 1775, at the very beginning of the American Revolution. I think there's a continuity between John Parker and the passengers and crew of Flight 93.
Indeed. Indeed. It is something where a lot of people, we like I mentioned, we focus on the Pentagon, we focus on the World Trade Centers, and the men and women who were aboard Flight 93 had an experience that none of us could even begin to imagine. Certainly mm-hmm. afterwards, you know, people imagine, you know, what would I do? And they try to be vigilant about watching.
Right.
But this is something that, as you mentioned, it was an air battle, you know, it was something that it was a battle mm-hmm. On our soil, but above the air. In your book, I mean, what made you decide to include this as a part of America Invaded, as focusing on Flight 93 as opposed to the Pentagon and the World Trade Center?
Well, I mean, we tried to cover a lot of ground in the book. I mean, we cover a broad swath of time, and we cover from the first arrival of the Europeans in the United States right up until, you know, acts of terrorism in the 21st century. So we actually included, I mean, elements like, I mean, very briefly, elements like the Twin Towers as well in the New York chapter of the book. But what we're interested in is the way that fighting has affected our country, has affected all of us. I mean, the way that we have been invaded or attacked has shaped us, for in ways for good or ill. I mean, New York was invaded by the Dutch, colonized by the Dutch, and became New Amsterdam, whereas Alaska was invaded by the Russians, for example.
Sure.
And that has had an impact on each of those states and, you know, shaping them to be the way they are today.
And how has it, I mean, we know, we kind of get an immediate idea of how things have changed as a result of 9/11 when we go through the airport and have to go through security. What other ways
Sure.
would you say we've changed since 9/11?
Well, I mean, certainly we have, obviously air security was modified, TSA, all of that. And of course we have become, you know, engaged. I mean, our being attacked led to, you know, American invasions. I mean, as you, I think you mentioned just earlier, we've been fighting an unprecedented war in Afghanistan, that which, you know, in just a few days will be 16 years that we've been fighting, which is the longest that America has ever fought a war, you know, ever, and which has cost over 2,000 lives and trillions of dollars. But we're still, I think, committed to trying to address the issues of terrorism that were created 16 years ago. And the enemies may be different. It may be ISIS today instead of Al-Qaeda, but there still continues to be a major threat with terrorism around the world.
And the thing too that that you really do drive home with this story about Flight 93 is the random acts of heroism and what it means to not only be Americans but to be wanting to fight for the safety of others, to want to band together. Do you think that Americans are in a position where they would step up? Have we changed very much in 16 years?
I think it was quintessentially American what they did, even though I would say, even though the fact is that there was a Japanese, 20-year-old Japanese student, college student among the crew, among the passengers, also a German national as well. But nevertheless, there was something, I think, really uniquely American about the way they did. They acted. I think in our country, as a generalization, that we have a bias towards action. We'd like to see action, whether it's from we'd like our politicians to do something more than just talk. We want them to, actually get something done, no matter where you are, left or right. In terms of athletes, we want them to, show us what they're all about on the field, and what they say after the game is much less important to us, I think, in general. I think we have a common, a bias towards action, and I think that Flight 93 and our admiration for that is kind of part of all of that.
I agree. And I really want to thank you again. We've been talking to author and historian Christopher Kelly, who has written America Invaded. And one of the chapters talks about Flight 93. He also has written other books, including America Invades, and which deals with how America's invaded or been military involved with nearly every country on Earth.
Well, we missed three. Andorra, Bhutan, and Liechtenstein are the three we've missed entirely. It doesn't mean that we've invaded all of them, but we have things like bases and
Azores
in Portugal.
We thought about it.
Liechtenstein's kind of shady.
Paul Farvar, who joins me in studio, looked at me when you mentioned the Russia invasion of Alaska, and which I believe you're talking about the one in the early 1800s when it was over a trading post.
Right. Well, like Russian invasion. Well, that's right. Until 1867, when we actually bought Alaska from the Russians, the Russians had Alaska as a colony. And even today, like the indigenous people in Alaska, most of them are Christian, but they're neither Protestant nor Catholic. They're actually Orthodox, which is a legacy of having been invaded by the Russians, which endures today, even though, of course, the Russians are long gone.
Well, Paul kind of doubted that that I knew anything about that, but I also knew that the natives that had lived there that had been sort of that had to flee went to an island that sounds a lot like Chicago. The Chicago, I can't pronounce it because it's got the Chicago Hub Island to reinforce a trade embargo with the Russians, but that's neither here nor there.
Right.
Right.
I stand corrected, but I did know that Liechtenstein was not one of the countries we invaded, and I was going to call you out on that.
It could be some some future president's to-do list. I don't know.
Someone's list now.
Future and or Christopher, how can people find your work? I'm guessing it's all available online, including your local bookstores and Amazon.
Yes, but they could also find it on our website at americainvaded.com or americainvades.com as well. We're also supporting 5% of the proceeds from American Invades go to support military charities as well.
Well, I really appreciate your time and extraordinary work, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Patty. It was my pleasure.
My pleasure as well. Have a great evening. We'll talk to you again soon. Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is comedian Paul Farvar, Esquire. I only say Esquire in case you have any legal issues. You want to check in with him and get some advice. Not for free, necessarily, because it might cost you your dignity. We haven't decided yet.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not accurate if it is free. So I make no guarantees.
See, this is the thing.
Radio.
There are no promises. We're also thrilled to welcome in studio with us the president of Weber Grill Restaurants, Brian. Now, it says our Brian Garish.
Oh, that's a bad family joke. Brian.
It's Brian.
Yeah.
Brian joined. I'm going to read your whole bio right now.
There are
times when I'm about to go on stage when someone will read my whole bio, but the fact that you joined as the executive vice president in 1999 and during that time opened stores in Lombard, Schaumburg, Chicago, and Indianapolis, and now are celebrating the 15th anniversary of Weber Grills here in Chicago, I think that's a pretty cool track record there.
Well, you know what? It's a great and a fun brand to be associated with, so At the time I joined, I think it was two or three employees. So everybody had a great title back then.
Tell us the truth. You've been lured by other companies and you've stayed because you enjoy Weber Grill a lot.
I did. I'm from Minneapolis originally, but came to Chicago many years ago with Hyatt Hotels and then moved away, lived overseas for a while.
Really?
And had a choice of any city I wanted to live in the country. And I was kind of down to Boston or Chicago. And I just thought Chicago is a great city to be in. It's great sports.
And you still have family in Minnesota, don't you?
Yes, I do.
I was going to say
it. How can you tell, you know?
No, because I mean, thinking about that logistically and, you know, and also even geographically what the weather is like, it would be more familiar to be in Chicago.
This is actually south, considered south.
I know. It's so much warmer.
It's so much warmer.
That extra 3 degrees of warmth during it. I mean, had you gone to Minneapolis or Minnesota during any of the polar vortexes that we were suffering through here?
I grew up in a polar vortex.
They didn't call it that though when we were kids.
No, it's just cold.
It was just cold. Just cold.
Yeah.
So what was your background in Minnesota? What did you want to do?
I really was just working my way through school in a restaurant up in Minnesota, and I felt, you know, I'm one of those guys that got a job, and when I got out of college, and I liked it so much, I just never looked back. I never looked back. My degree was in biology and management and literature and things like that. And I was just working in a restaurant and I thought, oh my God, I love this. I love working with people. I'm working with creative people around me and it's a crazy environment and it's a lot of fun.
I love it. Well, and you brought us a tray of burgers and chips and, oh, by the way, the cookies. I haven't even gotten to the cookies. Did you give them cookies?
Those are low-carb cookies,
by the way. Go stop them and tell them they're cookies.
They're coming back, I think.
They're coming back for cookies because Rob and Esmeralda stopped by for some of the treats.
I saw Paul wiping his face as I
came in. Yeah, we already dipped into the chips.
Oh, my God, it's so good.
But that's Patty's fault.
We do a segment called What's Paul Eating? So we can't make it Weber because everyone's going to know that it's either the Weber Grill burger or the amazing chips or the cookies. But tell us a little, the burger is ridiculous. Like I you know, and you caught me eating only half the one part of the bun. I'm guessing you know other people in your life who only eat half the bun.
My girlfriend Judy, who's over there, she's a famous half bun hamburger person.
Well, because here's the thing: all the bun is great, but if I can have the burger and then have a cookie later and not feel as badly
good.
About
that's
myself,
good. That works.
That's the trade-off.
Have some potato chips with the onion dip. Too.
Also, the onion dips are ridiculous. I'm guessing this is not your soup mix in sour cream kind of situation. I'm tasting some real onions. It's for real stuff. And the red onions, the wonderfully grilled red onions on the burger, too.
Well, you know, it's great. What's always fun about hamburgers, and I'm constantly amazed how hamburgers, you keep thinking, how can hamburgers get any bigger? But they really just keep on growing. Restaurants and the toppings. But we've been doing great hamburgers for a long, long time. And it really is an authentically cooked on charcoal hamburger. It always has been. That's what's fun about our concept is that we really do cook on Weber grills. And it's real charcoal. And not a lot of people do that.
Wait, you use real charcoal? I mean, I guess it makes sense, right? I mean, you got to be all in if you're the Weber restaurant.
Weber grills, yeah.
So, I mean, like, they're not like all the kettle grills in the back in the kitchen, are they? Not like a whole row of them, are there?
Yeah.
Are there really kettle?
If you come into the restaurant,
what?
You got to come in the restaurant.
I got to come in the restaurant.
And there's six grills that are out there, and they're 36 inches in diameter. They're all charcoal.
Okay.
And in our three Chicagoland restaurants, we go through 1 ton of charcoal every day.
What?
So
that's amazing.
It's a lot of fun. It's different.
Did you happen to do, there was an event in, you came here in 1999. So in 2000, like maybe that year, did you bring a bunch of people to the Zany's Comedy Club on Wells? By any chance, do you have any recollection of that? Because there was a whole bunch of people from England who were with Weber Grills, and they came in, and like we had the whole audience was filled with all these men and women from England who were with Weber Grills. I'll never forget that show.
Weber Grills. It's Weber Grill, Patty.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but he's got grills
but we
in the
have
restaurant.
Grills. Yeah, so they both.
I'm guessing they got more than one.
It's like you say jewels, or you say jewel.
I say Jules.
See, okay. I just want to make sure.
And the Dominics.
There's a bunch of people trying to go on your website right now, and they're adding the
Weber Grill. Weber Grill. Yeah. You know, if I was Weber Grills, I would buy also thegrills.com.
With the Z at the end?
The Z. Yes,
well,
no.
Well, I hope if you're buying a grill, you would buy grills.
I'm saying. Right? So. We've had a Weber kettle grill for... Okay, we moved from Northwest Highway in 2000, so that grill is at least 18 years old because we had it when we were still living there. I mean, those things last forever. They're amazing.
I had a neighbor who had a Weber grill, and he was holding the leg on with like a vice grip. And I said, really, I'll get you another grill, man. You know, he's like, no. This was my dad's grill. I gotta
yes!
keep it there.
This was the grill my dad used to go out on, and yep. you know, and my yep. and he would douse it with way too much lighter fluid, right? And he'd be standing. I mean, you'd see my dad. Here was what drove me crazy: was that he would, you know, stack the charcoal, right, and then put newspaper on there, douse it with lighter fluid, and then stand there with like a little match, like about an inch away from the whole thing. You'd see it go. Poof.
I remember my father doing it with gasoline. So.
Oh wow, that's safe.
How does a president of a Weber grill, how does he start his fire?
I start it with our Weber charcoal starters, mm-hmm. which is actually like a paraffin,
okay,
little cube that we have.
Well, that makes sense.
We make a grill that is actually my favorite grill in my backyard. It's a gas-starting charcoal grill.
I'm sorry. The words you're using are fantastic to me. A gas-starting charcoal grill.
It starts so you can be up and running with charcoal in about 7 or 8 minutes versus all the gasoline yes. or lighter fluid that your dad used.
Well, and because you know that your barbecue is starting, that your charcoal is starting when the edges start to get gray around the charcoal.
Yeah, you can't. People say to me, I love the flavor of the charcoal on my steak or my hamburger or whatever. And I say, well, actually, you don't like the... you got to have it in ember where it's burned off all of the...
Yeah.
strange flavors and
exactly
stuff like that,
but. Yeah, I mean, people, do you like your yours with a little charcoal down it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have any I'm not very picky. I'll just eat everything, so it's like pretty
is that why all the food's over
yeah
by you
that's
there?
Why they would put it by me and then I like it when you could tell when it's charcoal-y. I think it tastes better.
Well, by the way, I mean, it's only September 12th now. We can there's plenty of time to get your grill in. And
well, you can grill through the winter, too.
Yes, you can. That's true.
No problem.
Or just go to Weber Grill.
Well, you were saying, though, you had all those people from, or was it from the UK that were there? Mm-hmm. So we are around the world.
Yes.
And because we are a Chicago company, we do have people coming in from around the world, and while they're here,
I need you to specifically remember that night in 2000.
Were they heckling you?
No. Here was what was so great about it. It was in the early part of 2000. I got married in July of 2000, and there was this whole group of British Weber Grill reps who'd come in for some meeting or whatever. And I was talking about planning for my wedding. I was the MC that night.
Okay.
And I was talking about, and they asked me what my husband's last name was, and because I was talking about how my husband is Irish. And I said my husband's last name, and the whole audience goes, "Oh, he's Welsh." And the thing is that, like, I mean, my husband is 1/10 Welsh. He just happens to have a Welsh last name.
I'm Welsh.
So, well, there you go. Are you really?
Yeah, Garish
is a Welsh name. Have you been to Wales?
I've not been. I've not been. I got to go over there.
You have to go to Wales.
It's on my bucket list.
Okay,
for
Carnarvon.
Sure.
If I may recommend, Carnarvon's one of the great towns in Wales. And we'll talk about this. Let's take a quick break and find out how Weber Grill Restaurant in River North is celebrating their 15th anniversary. These burgers, for one, I don't know how much more you're doing, but this is already a good start. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. You know, we are always just so honored to have some of the great restaurateurs who join us in studio, including our guest tonight, who is the president of Weber Grill right here in Chicago. They're celebrating their 15th anniversary. Joining us is Brian Garish. Seriously, what is the joke with the R? Why is it a family joke with the R, period?
You know, I seriously did not know that my first name is Richard legally, and I went to get my license when I was 16, and you had to get your birth certificate, and I pulled it out. I thought my middle name was Richard, and I looked at my mother, and she was kind of looking the other way, and I said, what's with that? And she said, well, it was a family feud between your grandmother and myself, and I wasn't going to ever win it. So I said, okay, we'll name him Richard, but we're going to call him Brian. So
Really?
And legally, you can sign the letter R, which you see a lot of people with just one initial.
F. So Murray Abraham comes to mind.
Yes, exactly. So
I'm putting you in the same category as F. Murray Abraham.
Thank you very much.
Now when I see someone with the first initial, I'll be like, hey, that's like my friend Brian from Weber Grill.
R. Brian, yeah.
R. Brian, exactly. Do you want to have an initial in front of yours?
No, I like Paul. My middle name is worse.
So. What's your middle name?
Let's just change this.
Oh, interesting.
It's Richard.
It's written.
No.
Mine is Dora, because my mother's name is Dora, and she couldn't think of anything else to put on my birth certificate. So there you go. When I have my mom's name. That's nice. And by the way, my sister's name, Dora. So anyway.
and her middle name is Patricia.
No, that's I don't know what my sister's middle name is. Huh. Interesting question right there.
You don't know your sister's middle name?
No, we don't speak. Anyway, that's not why we have you in studio. It's not to unfold our family histories and the mystery of what goes on in our past. It's to talk about Weber Grills, 15th and Weber Grills, by the way, that's apostrophe because it's possessive of, also it's multiple grills. Their 15th anniversary. How are you guys celebrating this month?
Well, we've got our hamburger that you guys are eating here tonight. So we've
I've been eating.
So if you order that during the day, you get for $15, you get that hamburger plus one of our Weber backyard brews. So that's a great deal. And then we also sell the sandwich. And then we've got some other specials and things like that that we're doing in the restaurant. So.
Well, this burger is amazing. It's got butter chips and caramelized like red onions on it and Merck's cheddar cheese. I'm sorry, I know, Paul, you haven't started
eating
yet.
I'm trying to pace myself.
It's Angus beef.
Do you have a deal when the 100th person comes in, like all the balloons come up and they win a Weber grill?
There is a deal coming up.
Oh, is it really?
It's actually it's the anniversary, 15th anniversary of our Chicago location, which is about four blocks over here. And the company itself goes back to 1952, which is a great story in itself that the gentleman by the name of George Stephen worked for a company here called the Weber Brothers Sheet Metal. And one of the things they did in their metal shop was they fabricated the buoys for the yacht harbors here.
Really?
And so if you can imagine the top of a buoy kind of being in that shape, that's one of the things that they made. And he supposedly was out in the suburbs and his grill barbecue didn't work all that well and it was raining and things like that. So he took the top of a buoy and he turned it upside down and he cut a few holes in it. And that's where the Weber kettle came from.
Come on.
That makes sense.
I love that. It makes complete sense.
Yeah, it's a great story.
Circular, yeah.
Makes you look around and say, well, what can I cut a hole in and do something?
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I'm not that sort of adventurous when it comes to repurposing items in my vicinity.
Well, yeah. I used to do that with bowls for marijuana when I was in college. But that's a
different
whole
story. Other. Different story altogether. Yeah. By the way,
size bowl.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have to like look around for
unless
different
things.
Unless
you went to certain colleges.
I was going to say, you never know with Paul, apparently. What kind of parties are you throwing? Everyone can go to WeberGrillRestaurants.com for all the great information about their celebration. And the restaurant down here is at 539 North State Street, right in River North.
Right.
But I didn't realize that you guys have, do you have grilling classes at that location or is that only in Schaumburg?
No, we have those in Schaumburg and then the Lombard location. We've done grilling events out on the patio there before, but gets the fire department, which is about two blocks away, a little bit nervous because it's a high-rise building there.
Here's what you do. You got to make sure you get them burgers first.
You know what? We took ribs over to them.
All right. And that wasn't enough?
They were over the day before visiting us because all the smoke was billowing out of the place. And we got to be very good friends with them after that. But they said no more grilling out in the patio.
That's fair. They got a lot to deal with.
But, you know, that's really part of our history because if you think about it, Weber is not really – you don't go to a Weber store per se. You go to our different retailers and things like that.
Sure.
So, you know, it's our way of really selling the grills is to show people what you can do on the grills.
Mm-hmm.
We've been making cookbooks since the early mid-50s. And the founder, one of the things that he loved to do was to teach people the versatility of cooking on the grill. So it just kind of one thing led to another Our myth within the company is that George Stephen, who's our founder, had 12 children, 6 boys and 6 girls. And he said, these guys need something to do during the summer.
Right.
So they started kind of a little bit of a catering business. And they were going out and they were doing demonstrations and they were doing some corporate events and things like that. And then finally he said, you know what? let's see if we can bring this indoors. And we figured out an exhaust system to get all of the charcoal smoke out and things like that, which is still patented for our brand to be able to cook like that on charcoal inside. But that's where the whole teaching people how to cook on the grill started. And we feel whether it's cookbooks or in our cooking classes, that's a great way to get people to understand the both the grill, and then that just naturally led to doing the restaurants.
Oh, it makes complete sense. And what is your what would you say is your strongest dish that you grill on the Weber grill?
Well, I think, you know, we're known for our steaks.
You, I'm asking what
me
you
personally?
Do. Yes. We know your steaks are good and the burgers are outrageous. But what would you say? What's his go-to? What's your go-to dish?
You know what? I love to cook for Judy when she wants me to cook something. Is I'll do some fish on a on a plank.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. It's great. It's awesome. It's really, it's like foolproof because the fish won't stick on the grill. It gets a nice wood flavor to it, and it's very forgiving. So.
There you go. Now you know, Paul, how to impress the lady. Because she smiled. She smiled. She nodded and was reminiscing over the last great fish that he made. So if you want to know how to impress the woman in your life, Paul, I'm just, you know, learn from the president of Weber Grill. I'm just saying.
But I have a burrito place right next to me that I can act like I did all the cooking.
You can grill a burrito. Yeah.
That's
I don't
a good
have
point.
A grill anymore. I actually.
Or a girl. So there you
yeah,
go.
That's true.
Just saying. Maybe these things go hand in hand.
It's all making sense now.
I'm just saying.
I'll tell you one of the fun things on the grill, though, that you can do. And this is a class that we have coming up. But you can smoke a whole turkey on the grill for Thanksgiving. So
smoke it.
Paul, if you want to learn something, come on out to that class that we're doing in Schaumburg, and that's really a lot of fun.
It's the Thanksgiving Feast on the Grill, November 4th at the Schaumburg location, and everyone can go to WeberGrillRestaurants.com for all that information.
That's right.
It has been a pleasure. Will you please come and join us again?
I will. I had a lot of fun.
This is wonderful.
Thanks, Brian.
Again, we've been talking to Brian Garish, Brian Garish, president of the Weber Grill restaurant right here at River North. I didn't even talk to you about your experience with the Burger King restaurants, but you said you were overseas. I didn't realize that you were in Hungary and living in Budapest, and this is amazing. You have an incredible life story.
It's a fun background, yeah.
So we'll have to get more into that when we have
another
more time.
Time.
Yeah, thank you so
thank
much,
Thank you
sir.
Very much for having us.
Absolutely, our
okay.
pleasure. It's
right.
time now for our news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio one more time before I throw to the news. Don't forget that celebration for their 15 years at Weber Grill is at 539 North State Street in River North. I just wanted to give Rob another moment before I throw to him just because I'm
still chewing on my fantastic burger.
I wasn't
going to
say that.
Give me all the
that.
Moments you need.
I wasn't
going to
say
great.
That. I was saying I was going to give you a moment because I rushed right through my read. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. It's Music Monday, and we are thrilled to welcome in studio Valentine Bennett, who is appearing coming up this month. He's got shows at the Sweet Carolines in Hoffman Estates, Morton Pumpkin Fest. Oh, my God, that's such a... It's like the... By the way, do people know that Morton, Illinois is like the pumpkin capital of the world? Did you know that, Paul?
There's an argument whether it's there or Liechtenstein, but... we're still
no one knows what you're talking about right now. And you know what's so funny, having done all that talking, I completely forgot what song Someone Like You. Look at that, I've got the song right. Valentine Bennett is playing live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Here he is with Someone Like You.
There's a new wind blowing like I've never known. I'm breathing deeper than I've ever done, and it sure feels good to finally feel the way I do. 'Cause I wanna love somebody like you. I'm letting go off on my lonely yesterdays. I'm forgiving myself for the mistakes I made. Now it's just one thing, my only thing I want to do. 'Cause I want to love somebody like you. I want to feel the sunshine shining down on me and you. when you put your arms around me. Let me know there's nothing in this world I can do. I used to run in circles going nowhere fast. Take one step forward and two steps back. Couldn't walk a straight line even if I wanted to. Cause I wanna love somebody like you. I wanna feel the sunshine shining down on me and you. When you put your arms around me, let me know there's nothing in this world I can't do. Sometimes it's hard for me to understand, but you're teaching me to be a better man. Don't wanna take this life for granted like I used to do. Cause I wanna love somebody like you. I wanna love somebody like you. Yeah. I wanna love somebody like you.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Amazing that was, Valentine Bennett with Someone Like You. Come on over if you want. Can you grab a microphone over here? It's just easier to interview if we grab you, grab a seat with you. And Paula, again, I noticed that he didn't ask you to play Dumbe.
Yeah, you know.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I was. Come up. I didn't know there was going to be a solo acoustic guitarist here. And given that there's some percussion would clearly assist that, I would have brought my djembe, but it's cool. You know, Michael and I, we had a little tiff this weekend, so I think maybe just let it slide into it.
Yeah, just so you know.
Yeah, just so you know, if you need another guitarist, bassist, all multi-purpose artists, I play all that stuff.
I'll keep that in mind.
Okay, Valentine.
But he does play in a band, a country band. Are you, you're Derringer and Rye?
Derringer and Rye anymore.
Not anymore.
I currently play in a group called Semple.
Semple. I will change my notes accordingly.
Yeah.
Semple. Okay, excellent. And but you pride yourself on having a on being able to function as a one man band.
Yes, yes.
A lot of looping involved.
Yeah, a lot of footwork.
Yeah.
I actually have my pedal board in the the green room.
Did you
back
say pedal board?
Pedal board.
I thought I said puddle board.
Pedals.
I kind of need to create something called a puddle board now. I'm just saying, just for my own edification. Sorry. Go ahead.
What would that entail, Patty?
I don't know, but it sounds fun.
So it's like you just wear galoshes and run around.
Maybe,
there.
maybe all the sound is all squishy noises. You don't know. You don't know how I roll. So you have your pedal board in the green room. Because I think that people are starting to understand the idea of looping and being able to sort of create the different sounds that you want in any situation.
You'd be surprised. I still get time and time again people asking me if I'm playing the pre-recorded stuff. But it's definitely become more mainstream, you know, especially now with Ed Sheeran topping all the charts. He's about to sell out United Center just by himself, and he does the one-man band thing.
Interesting.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I remember when the first looper came out in like 2001. Well, maybe it's out before, but there wasn't that many options that you have now.
Yeah.
But people
would
be like, how did you do that? And it's all organic, just putting in the songs. It's really, really cool.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, for a long time, I was just a singer-songwriter guy, and I'm really more a guitar player than anything else. And you know, after 3 hours of just strumming basic chords, I was like, God, if I'm bored, I can only imagine what these people are feeling out there. So
it changes the dynamic a lot for shows, especially.
Being able to add different elements to it. Sure.
But it also puts a lot of djembe players out of business, too. I'm not going to lie to you. That was one of the many bands that I was kicked out of.
That's a big demand in the looping industry, is definitely having a djembe.
The looper killed my music career. I'm not going to lie to you.
Your niche? Your niche, whatever it is, you know.
Something
what
like
when
that.
When I'd play with singer-songwriters, they didn't need a second guitarist anymore.
Fair
Let's
enough.
Put it that way.
Where are you from originally, Valentine?
Born in Chicago, raised and currently reside in McHenry.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you for being specific about where that is, because people always say the Chicagoland area.
Well,
How long have you been playing music?
Long time. Started piano. I was classically trained in piano at 8 years old. Picked up the guitar at 11.
Okay.
Haven't put it down since.
Was classically training for the piano a choice at 8 years old, or was that something your parents were like, this is what you're going to do right now?
A little bit of both.
Sure.
My brother played, and I think early on it was clear that I had a little bit of a knack for music.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to play, so, you know, my mom was like, basically, this is what you're going to do. So it was a little bit of both.
Okay.
But I can't tell you that. I wasn't able to leave the house until I did my practicing for the day. So my buddies would come knock on the door like, can Valentine play? Like, no, he's got to practice. So that's good. It instilled good work ethic in me. And
yeah, no kidding.
Yeah,
it's good to have. I mean, that's the thing about being a musician is that there are people who are dedicated to always making themselves better. And there are others where it's like, as artists, we know that. It's easy to kind of go, all right, I'll just show up and do the work when it's time rather than doing the
call
work.
It in. Yeah. As they say.
Oh, that's the worst.
Oh, I do that sometimes too.
Well, I mean, I know that I saw your shows, and I did that for years, where you're playing at club bars, and people are like, "Play some Dave Matthews," and you're just like, "Hey, let me just do what I had in mind." And
and
you're playing in the corner of a bar. It's so hard some nights. Some nights it's awesome when you make a connection, but you know, obviously you get to do your own music, and that makes it a lot better.
Oh, no kidding! Yeah.
So it's a lot harder. I remember the transition from I've switched from music, playing cover bands and stuff like that, and then going to do stand up. And then I went back to doing singer songwriter for one night, and I was like, oh, I don't miss this at all. Like, just a bunch of drunk people.
Yeah.
Like, you do all these, you know, you're doing the Lord's work. Like, some of these bars, people are so drunk, and you just gotta keep fighting through.
Well, that's kind of the beauty of me. I mean, I don't pretend to know what it's like for a musician in a crowded, you know, drunk bar, but it's different for a comedian who has to rely on people listening. Like, I've often wished, I mean, I bought a guitar on the road one time. I was like, you know what? Maybe if I just, like, when it's not going well, I just play a song, because people always seem to applaud when the music stops. Right?
Like, yeah, you're right.
Like, not always.
Not always. Just, but for the most part, they're like, oh, something just happened. I guess we'll just applaud.
But yeah, it's fun. Like, I know I always miss it sometimes playing, but then I just remember I was at a Cubs game and my old musician friend was playing at a bar, and he's like, hey, do you want to come up on stage? And I just look in the crowd, I'm like, nah, I don't want to deal with this like at all.
You really got to love it. I mean, performing's my oxygen. I it gets me
absolutely
up in the morning. So, but yeah, it's, you know, it's a job, and like it can, like, I played 7 gigs this weekend, and I came from a show here tonight. I was exhausted, and now I got an hour and a half drive home. So,
well, this list, I'm looking at these appearances you have coming up. I mean, like, sometimes we'll have, you know, musicians in, and they've got maybe something at the end of the month.
Yeah.
You're working constantly all the time. Some of the places where people, you're going to be up in my neighborhood. You're going to be playing at Firewater on September 21st up in Edison Park.
That's a fun one.
Going over to Apple Fest in Long Grove. You've got, and private events. Let's be honest. Those are nice to pay the bills.
They're lucrative, that's for sure.
Yeah,
our band is doing a lovely private event in November in Puerto Vallarta. They're flying us down there. So I've been excited about that for about 6 months.
Well,
that's
telling
those
you
are
something.
The good ones.
Puerto Vallarta is beautiful. How long are you staying in Puerto Vallarta?
4 or 5 days.
Excellent.
Days?
Yeah, the beaches are great. Yeah. And you can go horseback riding in the jungle, by the way. I don't know if you're a fan of horseback riding, but if you're interested, it's a good way
like,
to see.
He's like, nah, I'm just going to stay
on the beach.
I'm more of a fan of drinking, so that's what I'll be doing.
Don't do that in the jungle on the horse.
Yeah.
Although, you know.
Or do, I don't know.
I don't, yeah, exactly. It's your adventure. You write your own ending. You also have great events coming up at CDs and Me, which is one of my favorite places to perform as well. You're going to be at the Johns. Well, I'm not telling you. I'm telling our listeners.
I actually haven't been there yet.
So oh.
CDs and Me? I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, it's a great venue.
I've heard that.
It's wonderful. Valentine Bennett is also going to be at the Johnsburg Fest in Johnsburg, Illinois on September 30th. The London House, that's right here, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
September, are you up on doing the rooftop, the London House?
That's my first time there, so I'm not entirely sure what they have planned.
That's fantastic. He's going to be at the London House on October 6th. More music with Valentine Bennett when we come back on 720 WGN. It's pretty late. You are listening pretty late. It is Music Monday. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and the studio has filled up. We are celebrating. We have comedian Paul Farvar. We've got Mark DiCarlo. We've got Kristen, who's going to be joining us at the... Are you at the very last Funny Females with us?
Yes, I am.
It's going to be it. This is it. This is the last one. Never going to do it again. But you know what? Let's. What was that?
Finally.
Stop it. But right now we are celebrating Music Monday. Valentine Bennett has been performing all across the country, and he's got a full schedule. You'll be able to see him all over the Chicagoland area, including Sweet Caroline's and Hoffman Estates on the 14th, the Morton Pumpkin Fest on the 15th. This is a few of them. I'm guessing there's a website. We'll find out more about that from him. But first, here he is playing live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, playing Better Luck Next Time.
Waiting by the station, and I'm hoping that the train arrives on time. And while the months go by in the blink of an eye, but the last few months have felt like a lifetime. And I threw all my change in your wishing well, and I was hoping for your kiss and tell. I'll take my chances and place my bets. It's worth the risk for us to have met. The cards were stacked from the very start, and the odds were good that I win your heart. So I took a chance on what we'd hope to find. But better luck next time. Occasionally it occurs to me that I'm lacking something good inside of me. I've been lost and found and turned around, and only to find I'm always upside down. The years they fly, and still I've tried to keep myself away from a goodbye. I guess I thought you'd always end up mine. But better luck next time. Better luck next time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Valentine Bennett with Better Luck Next Time. We have a full house tonight. We've got comedian Paul Farvar Esquire. We have Valentine Bennett, who, as we mentioned, is going to be performing all around the Chicagoland area. What's the website people can go to find your schedule?
ValentineBennett.com.
Very, very easy.
Pretty simple.
Valentine, traditional spelling, Bennett, two T's. Excellent. Love it.
Like Tony, except Valentine.
There you go. That works for everybody. Comedian Mark DiCarlo joins us in studio. Kristen, how do I say your last name? And that's why I want to make
Lighty.
Sure. Lighty. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure. I know I've done it before. And as you know, I always ask everybody. We are performing our very last Funny Females on September 18th at Zany's on Wells. And how many times have you had the chance to join us? Because I don't keep track exactly of how many. But I know that you've done a great job at all those shows.
Oh, thank you. I think I've been for about 6 or 7 of them.
And it's been fun. It's one of the things that's always hard for me to explain to people is that, you know, they're like, oh, you know, I mean, Mark, you know this. You've been a stand-up comic for a long time, too.
Well, I don't even know what Funny Females is because I don't live here anymore.
It's an all-female showcase of comedy. So it's all women in stand-up. And it used to, we actually had quite a few women early on who would come from Second City, who would kind of do more characters. Early on, there were women who would do, there was one girl who would do like almost a version of a 1980s comic. So she would have a blazer with a big puffy like shoulder pad.
And the big hair. Elaine Boozler, basically.
Yeah, it was a little bit like very like, am I right? Am I right, ladies? You know, like all that stuff. There was one girl who used to have a puppet that would like shoot out tampons. I can't remember what that bit was, but we had a lot of different stuff that happened on early in the first years of the Funny Females.
It's a process.
It is a process. Where are you from originally, Kristen?
I grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
All right. And what was that?
And the interview is over.
That is not how we treat our guests. I mean, I have to go to the news, but it's not because she's from Wisconsin. It's not at all because of that.
I actually had to stop saying that in my act because drunk people would scream at me about the Packers, and it just got too overwhelming.
What's the closest place next to it where it doesn't have the word green or bay in it?
Probably Depeer.
And Appleton.
Sounds so much better.
Yeah, just say you're from Sheboygan. I think that'll be
See, it always gets
a
laugh.
Get a cheer, yeah.
Sheboygan always gets a laugh. She even laughed thinking about being from Sheboygan.
Yeah, actually, I run a show called Mom Jeans, and my character, Barb, is from Sheboygan.
Well, there you go.
She talks like this.
Solves everything, Kristen.
Well, when I started doing comedy and I would travel to Wisconsin, I would not tell them I was from Chicago.
Oh, they know about your plates.
But not on stage they don't. That would be weird.
Yeah. You don't drive on stage? All the cool kids do.
I was at a beep, beep. I did a bowling alley one time in Wisconsin. I can't remember what town it was.
How many guys?
But I was it was I can't remember if I was a feature actor or the headliner, but the manager, the owner was standing, the person who ran the night, we were sitting at a table, and the MC goes, "How do you want me to bring you up?" And I said, tell them that I've traveled all over the country, all the, you know, your usual stuff. And I said, just please do me a favor and don't say I'm from Chicago. I go, because I won't walk on stage if you do, right? Mm-hmm. And he goes up there, starts my intro, and to be a jerk, he said, "And she's from Chicago." And the audience starts booing. Oh. Before, and I just sat there. And the owner of the club went, "She said she ain't coming up there. You got to fix your own damn problem." So I made him stand up there and win the crowd back over for me because, you know what? Screw you. I told you exactly how I was going to do this. So I agree. You have to start taking it out of your intro, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Those old rivalries run deep.
They run very, very deep. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me are it's a plethora, it's a gaggle, it's a herd, it's a collection of comedians.
A murder.
A murder.
Crows and comedians travel in murders.
Do we travel in murders?
Mm-hmm.
All four of us, comedians by trade.
What do comedians do when they do well?
They kill.
Case
all
closed.
Right. All right, then. Fair enough.
Well said, Mark.
Comedian Kristen Leidy, comedian Mark DiCarlo, comedian Paul Farvar. See, I'll take off all the other titles because you all have other, I'm sure, have other titles. I mean, Mark's got also voiceover star.
And blacksmith.
Those aren't titles, those
and
are credits.
Those are credits. That's a good point. And blacksmith.
Blacksmith.
What other title would you like to add on to yours, Kristen?
Union organizer.
Union organizer. Excellent. I like that as well. Esquire over here. Me, just
Gem A players.
Mom and troublemaker. That's basically what I chose.
And not in that order.
No, not in that order at all. Kristen, how did you get started? When did you, what made you decide, you know what, I'm going to go for it with comedy?
I think 4.5 years ago, I was stationed down in Urbana, Illinois, working on organizing a union at the craft factory there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot to do down there, and a lot of the crew I was working with was more older, good old boys that like to go to the strip club together. So I was just kind of alone. And then,
do they go to the Silver Bullet there? Is that still there? Is the Silver Bullet still there?
I think it.
I went to school at Jam
Reach
Urbana.
For the mountains of Bush.
Yeah.
Funny I should say that.
Yeah.
So I started going to mics down there and I just really fell in love with it.
Here was the thing about Silver Bullet. They had dancers, but they also had comedy night when I was in college there. That's how I know about the Silver Bullet.
Oh, I didn't know they had comedy.
They had comedy night there.
That's so old school.
So they have female funnies too.
Yes, they did.
In a way, that's where it all started.
It all started right there. So you started going to open mics.
Mm-hmm.
And the trick to going to an open mic is to go watch other people and you're like, oh, okay, if that's all it takes to get up there, certainly I can throw something at this.
I did have a few of those moments. My thing was, I knew what I wanted to say, but I was so terrified and petrified that I would just kind of black out and say the words as fast as I could.
I still do that. What are you talking about?
That's how Carlin did it.
And here you are. You moved to Chicago to do comedy, or was it also in relation to your work?
It was both. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what is your favorite movie? It's got, because if it's not Norma Rae, I don't even know why we're talking to each other right now.
It's actually Night of the Living Dead.
Is it really? Yeah. Also similar to the work that you do.
Yeah, very true. Yes.
It's all very good.
Yeah. State bureaucracy does feel like that.
Oh, man. How different is it to be in Illinois doing the work that you do compared to Wisconsin?
Oh, I left Wisconsin because it was turning into a nightmare.
Yeah.
Scott Walker became governor and... you know, the thing I don't get about Wisconsin is very smart, working class people that always vote against their interests.
It's like Kansas.
Yeah.
There's a book about that.
Is there really? There's one in there are several books about it. But you know, it's
like most of the GOP constituency. Yeah. They vote consistently against their own. You know what? That must mean that the Republicans are better communicators because they're able to sell a bigger load of crap to a wider range of people and make them think it's true.
Have you read the book Strangers in Their Own Land? That might be another similar to what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. I think about the Book of Kansas. This one's down, I think, in Louisiana about people. I mean, so I was talking to a legislator who told me about the idea that, you know, well, here we're going off into politics, but
I have a good point though.
Yes.
To make. I'm
going to hold you to that. I'm kidding.
This weekend I stayed with my aunts out in Lombard, my mm-hmm. aunts Rose and Joanna, who are retired. And we have very spirited political discussions.
Okay.
They were Chicago Democrats, now not so much. And we were talking, and they were telling about how they, you know, people in our family have always had political arguments and discussions. And they said it used to get so bad back in the old days, the two men would be fighting and screaming at each other that they would call the Tribune and they would say, is it this or this? And the guy at the Tribune would say, it's this. And then it was over.
Really?
And the problem, I think, today now is there's no place everyone can turn to where the facts are the facts.
Legitimacy, to right. legitimize their argument, there's to no, back them up.
Yeah, there's no no publicly acclaimed fact.
Right.
Right? Everyone's got their own set of facts. That's why the fighting will never end.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. Irma was a ginned up news story by the water companies, which is why Rush Limbaugh went. Oh wait, yeah, he did evacuate.
Ran away.
Did I see this where Breitbart's Milo Yiannarumo? I heard that his house was destroyed in Florida. Did I read this?
You're smiling so big.
No, not really. I'm just curious. I mean, I hate to hear.
Let's take a look.
Let me just Google proof of a god and see.
No.
Yeah, his house was ruined.
His house. By the way, your wife Yenny has a lot of family down in Florida. I was following her, following them. Did you have friends, Kristen, down in Florida during Hurricane Irma?
I do not. I don't have a lot of Florida people.
I was surprised because I didn't know anybody really in the Houston during the Hurricane Harvey experience. But during Irma, like my whole Facebook page, I had tons of people who were weathering it out. My niece who lives in Orlando, your wife's family who lives down in Miami.
Live in Hialeah.
And she has family in Cuba too, which was terrifying.
And family in Key West.
Really?
So they all kind of gathered at Yenny's parents' house, which is a big strong condo complex, and everyone's fine, thank God.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were she was upset all week, understandably so.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
My brother was holed up in their house and in the master closet, his whole family in Sarasota. But
for how long?
They stayed overnight until Irma passed, but it didn't hit them as hard as they anticipated it was supposed to. But
yeah, it really took that left turn at Miami
at the very
across
end.
The bottom.
Yeah.
That's got to be so hard, too. And for, I mean, like trying to evacuate 6.3 million people, right? That was what was suggested. That's how many people were recommended to evacuate. A lot of people obviously did not. There were mandatory evacuations.
That's Floridians, not just regular people.
Right. That's okay. Now we're making fun of Floridians.
We're not making fun of them, but I mean, a lot of funny stories come out of Florida.
Yes, Paul?
So Milo said that he tweeted that his house is gone, according to the Miami Herald.
Maybe he just forgot where it was. I mean, you know, like when you forget where you parked your car, right? And maybe he lives in a street where like all the houses look the same, you know, and maybe he just forgot which one was his and he can't find it.
But he tried to make a joke of it saying Richard Branson's home was also devastated.
That's a hilarious joke.
He's a funny guy.
Did you see Ann Coulter tweeting about how like, and then John Kelly, when you have a general tweeting, when John Kelly has to step down from all the work he's everything he's trying to bolt down in the White House in the Oval Office, and he's got a tweet at Ann Coulter like, hey, slow your roll, crazy lady.
What did he, I don't know.
Oh, he was saying this is not the time to be making light of this when we're trying to keep people alive. Oh yeah.
Which is that exactly why she does it. She is. Can you say publicity whore on radio? She's that is what she does. She says this so that people like yourself will talk about it on the radio and promulgate her.
There's no such thing as bad press, Mark.
I've got to remember not. All the names I just said were ones I said I wouldn't say on my. I hardly ever say Kardashian or Jenner either. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is comedian Paul Farvar, Esquire. Yep. Comedian and actor, Mark DiCarlo.
And Esquire.
And You're not an Esquire.
I read it.
Your brother's an Esquire.
He is. And I've read Esquire. Does that qualify?
He's a big fancy Esquire.
I think it does.
I think it does too. He's got a big fancy, and his brother's a big fancy Esquire.
Oh, hugely fancy.
Here in Chicago?
In Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
He told me how much his retainer was, and I was like, I'm going to go down the street.
No, I'll get braces instead.
No, that was actually a holder. Actually, I wanted to hire him. That's not a story for air. We have Kristen Leidy in studio with us. True story. Mark was very kind with his time, and so was your brother. Kristen Leidy and I will be performing the very last Funny Females Showcase at Zany's on Wells on September 18th. It is Zany's longest and most successful running showcase in the history of the club. They're changing. I know, Mark. They're changing to the three-person show. As they do 6 nights a week, they're now doing that 7 nights a week. So they will no longer have a showcase. I know. I'm fine. It's totally fine. It's fine.
But you say it's the most successful they've ever had.
Yes.
So why would they discontinue it?
That's why I'm the last one standing. That's why we're the last showcase. The rest of them have been eliminated.
There were a bunch that didn't succeed. So one Patty couldn't save the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Can you take this female carnival elsewhere?
No, I feel like we've run our course. We've had a really good time. The women, I'm sure, are glad that they don't have to worry about whether or not I'll be on stage when they're done. Sometimes I would be in the back talking to Jenna, and like someone would finish because I could see how much time they had left, right? Because I could see the stopwatch. So sometimes people would come off like a whole minute early before they even got the light. So I'd be in the back of the room, and you've seen how long and narrow that room is. I had to come bolting down the.
It's like a submarine.
You've got good speed.
I also know the room really well. And I have to say, in all those years, I've never fallen from the back of the room running to the front of the room. Considering there's a couple stairs there, it's also in the dark, and there are people on the way. Yeah, if there's a waitress on route, then I'm in trouble.
You're talking about Zany's on Wells?
Yeah.
The last time I was there, someone tripped by the door that you go out of. Just like a regular dude.
Let's not highlight the fact that there's...
Oh, he was hammered.
There you go.
I have my business cards right there.
Right, but by that step.
Bert knows.
By that step and the incline by the ladies' room?
Yeah.
Back there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It just says Better Call Paul right above it.
So the Funny Females, there have been other showcases that have come and gone. There was one called...
The Amusing Gents, I thought was a good one.
The Amusing Gents was lovely. What was the Nate Weatherup and Emily Galati show where you like had...
Capricious Kids?
Something like that. Yeah, Capricious Kids, I believe. That would have worked out well. And then... Michael Isaac had one for a while, but I think the only other one that came close was Snapshots.
Snapshots,
which is Kevin Naughton's
Kevin's show. That was really fun.
Yeah, so those are the only two, I think, the long, and so yeah, Kevin got noticed, and then I was the last one to go. It's all right, I'm fine.
Monkeying around males. That one was pretty good.
That was a great one.
Right. Mark, I took it over after Mark.
The showcases 10 for 10 will continue to run. But what was fun about doing an all-female showcase was that, here was the thing too, like there are clubs all over the country that won't book more than one woman just on a three-person show. They're like, oh, we only need one woman on the show. The thing about Funny Females, and what I always contended on those shows too, by the way, if a woman was headlining, people were already all in on a woman being on stage. But, every week, and I've told this story on stage for years, someone will always come up to me after a show and say, you know, I don't usually like female comedians, but I guess you were funny. And I
put them up to it each and every time.
I have to bite the inside of my cheek to not go, you know, I don't like idiots. And that's always going to be the case. That's always going to be true. But the story I told last month, and this is true too, I was at the Zany's in St. Charles. I was headlining, and they put our photos up in the marquee, in the lobby and everything. And this guy came up to me after a show and very loudly was like, you know, I wasn't going to buy a ticket for the show because I saw there was going to be a woman on it. And, I'm like, I don't want to listen to a woman tell stories, and like,
talk about girl stuff. Exactly. I don't want to have to listen.
How am I going to relate?
And he goes, he's like, you know, I'm glad I came. You were funny. Maybe next time I won't think that way. And I'm like, you're still going to think that way. But but that was, so when people ask me, like, why do we have a funny female showcase? I mean, guys like that is.
It's for the guy in St. Charles.
It's for the guy in St.
Charles. To shock him.
To shock him. It's going to be an hour and a half of all of this.
Girl, make joke. Girl, make funny joke.
It is. What was funny, Kristen, was I could never think of a better title for the show. I didn't name it. It was never actually just my show. I just was the one.
Male did.
Yes. Yes. What should we have called it?
Chicks with Quips.
No.
Yeah, put that on the marquee.
Too late. It's too late now. I should have asked you 5 years ago.
Perhaps. Skirts with Skits?
Oh, God. Don't make me throw things at you. It's hard.
I think it's nice that you girls have your little show. I really do.
Skirts with skits. There we go.
Skirts with skits. Cute. You get up there, you make with the jokes.
Now you know why I didn't open this one up to suggestions from the audience.
We're going to
there's more.
We're going to open it up for public. If you guys have
no, the good news is the show
the winner gets
has run its course. We'll have some more tickets to give away the rest of this week. But tonight,
what day of the week is it on?
It's on Monday, next Monday. We've always had
did
good
you do
crowds.
A show tonight, Kristen?
Tonight, no, I did not. Oh. I worked all day.
You worked all day?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Is it a full-time job that you have?
It is. And then I'm a board member of a worker center, so I went to a meeting there and then, a big full day.
A big full day. And then they're like, go do radio at 12:30 at night.
Yeah,
why make not? With the funny. Mark DiCarlo, it was funny when you and I have spoken before.
We have.
Michael, once in a while, Michael Heideman Googled you and he's like, he was on Seinfeld! And he got very excited about that.
I was freaking out.
It was you were not freaking out. You were like, wait a minute, I didn't even know I was talking to somebody who'd been on Seinfeld.
That's usually the first thing I say.
Is I've been
Yeah. It's like whenever you meet someone from New York.
Right.
My deal is my wife loves New York and I'm from here, so I love here. And I think it's like Three Stooges or Marx Brothers. You have to pick one.
You do.
Have you ever met
By the way, Marx Brothers in Chicago. Those are the two I picked.
Me too.
All right then.
1,000%. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Have you ever met anyone from New York who in the first 60 seconds of them talking to you didn't say, "Well, I'm from New York." And ever. The next time, just put that in the back of your head, and every time you meet someone from New York, just check your second hand on your watch. It'll usually about 35, 40 seconds.
They'll tell you that they're from New York?
Constantly.
And they'll holler at you like that,
yeah.
too? All right, then I'll have to remember that. Because Griffin's told me that there's a classmate he has who always has to tell people in the class that he's Mexican. And Griffin has to remind them that he's Mexican, too. And he's like, well, you don't yell about it. He's like, exactly. He's like, you know, I just like to fly under the radar. Just you're right though. People from New York, when you smile in New York, I don't know if you've ever tried. Have you ever tried making eye contact in New York? It freaks them out. They don't know what to do with that.
It's like the law of the jungle. It's like you're attacking them.
Yeah, they don't want to make eye contact. They also don't. If you smile, they think you're stupid.
Mm-hmm. And they're gonna get one over on you.
Yeah. Look at this idiot.
The entire city is like a three-card Monty game. No matter where you are, what you're doing, someone's always on the grift.
It's true. Every single person.
I've told this story before too. It was in the middle of the winter. I'm walking down Michigan Avenue, and there's a homeless guy in front of me, and there's a homeless guy panhandling in a little alcove in front of us. Mm-hmm. And the guy walking down the street has no shoes. So as he walks by the guy panhandling, the panhandler goes, dude, wait a minute. He reaches into his bag and gives him a pair of shoes.
What?
A homeless guy to a homeless guy. That would never happen in the city of New York.
No.
True or false?
True. Wait, am I being quizzed?
Yes.
True.
But it happened right here in Chicago.
Yeah, that's
right over there. There you go. Wacker and State.
There you go. Now you know where. Yes, Paul.
Yeah, if you need a pair of shoes, that's the place to go.
I actually had a pair of shoes that are in my car still that I wanted to give to a homeless guy. They're like nice shoes, but I don't wear them anymore. A homeless guy was, as I was going in my car, is like, hey, do you have any money? I'm like, actually, I don't carry money, but what size are you? I have a pair of shoes. And he got really offended. He's like, what? I was like, nothing. Sorry.
See,
I'm Cinderella.
I've had this idea, Kristen, where like I read somewhere like if you have old purses and stuff, you know, stock it with things that a woman who's homeless might need. Mm-hmm. But I'm afraid of getting that reaction. Like, I don't want your ratty old purse filled with tampons.
In L.A., when I was leaving once, and we had when I was younger, we had all this alcohol like that we were like didn't finish from partying or whatever, and. This is when I was younger, back in the 90s.
You said that twice now.
Wasteful.
Yeah. And as we're going to the airport, we're like, we'll just give it to a homeless person. And three people were like, no, I don't drink. Three homeless people in LA. Like, are you serious?
LA's so healthy.
I'm on the paleo diet, man. I don't drink alcohol.
We were all like, how is this possible? I thought that's all they wanted.
I'm walking down the street in New York. I had just gone from Carmine's. I had a bag full of food. Leftovers were taken home. Walking by the plaza, a homeless guy walks out to me and goes, hey, do you have any money for food? And I go, no, but you're in luck. I got a delicious Italian meal. And he goes, blank that. I want money.
Well, he just wanted food.
Yeah, so I took it back. I gave it to somebody else.
He wants to buy what he likes. He doesn't want to eat your sloppy seconds.
Well,
we have to take a break, and I have an interview coming up with the executive director of the Prairie Center for Arts. I don't know who's going to be left. You guys are all welcome to hang out for the couple of segments. I recorded this earlier with our friend Teresa Olvera. And so if you guys want to hang out, I know we're going to do What's Paul Eating coming up at the end of the show. Don't tell me something good. Tell me what Paul is eating. Mark DiCarlo has been hanging out in studio with us. Are you hanging out for the last segment of the show?
Sure.
All right, Kristen, I know you're hanging out.
I'm in.
All right, everyone's all in.
She's going to unionize us all during commercial.
Hey, I'm all in on that. I paid my dues. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we are in the Allstate Showcase studio, and I'm thrilled to welcome Teresa. I asked you before the show, do you prefer Teresa or Teresa? My mom, who's from Mexico, says Teresa. Mm-hmm. That's why I asked you. Teresa Olvera.
Yes.
Who is the executive director of the Prairie Center Arts Foundation in Schaumburg.
Yep.
And I'm thrilled to be coming out there this Saturday performing Lipstick Mom. It's a patty melt. Are people asking you about what that means? Like, what's the show going to be about?
Yeah, we're getting a little bit of curiosity.
Sure.
And we've actually built some of the food and everything that we're offering in the reception prior to the to your going on stage.
Uh-huh.
We're building some of that around the patty melt theme. So expect to see a little bit of that.
I love that. So there's a reception.
There will be a reception before the event. The reception starts at 6:30.
Okay.
And then you will take the stage at 7:30. During the reception, we'll have little mini patty melts from courtesy of IHOP. We'll have little mini quesadillas from On the Border.
Wonderful.
And then we'll have some small servings of Irish pot roast.
Thank you.
From from Finn McCool's. And all those places are in Schaumburg and supporting the event.
I have to work out a lot before I come to my own show.
Well, there you go.
So you've got patty melts, you've got quesadillas, and Irish pot roast.
Yeah, that's right.
That's an exciting, that's a wonderful reception.
Oh, it'll be fun. Yeah, it'll be fun. Some nice hearty food before they go into the theater with you and have some hearty laughs, we hope.
And for people who are wondering, so this is a one-person show that I'm doing. It's partly the story of growing up Irish and Mexican. That's why it's a little bit of the patty melts and the themes of that. So thank you for incorporating it. But it's also the things that drive me crazy, the things that we all get a little bit hysterical about, try to figure out. You know, as I get older, I'm getting a little bit of perspective. I'm not saying wisdom, Teresa. I'm saying that I've got some perspective. And so some stories about my family, about living in Chicago. And for people who are worried about politics, this won't be political. You know, I might have some, you know, might hint at something that's sort of out there, the arguments that we get in with each other.
Sure.
But if people are worried at all about that, it's not going to be anything along those lines. Because people are burned out, aren't they?
There's much material out there.
Yeah. I'll leave it for Capital Steps when they come and they're performing at your center. When are they coming?
They're coming on the 21st of October.
Perfect.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to having them. It's been a few years.
Yeah.
So they're coming back at a time when they've got a lot of material to work with.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of events do you have coming up at the Prairie Center?
You are actually kicking off our season. You'll be our first performer in the newly named Al Larson Prairie Center for the Arts.
Okay.
It's been rededicated actually yesterday, Sunday afternoon, for the longtime mayor of the village of Schaumburg. So we're really, really delighted about that.
How long has he been mayor that he gets a whole center named after him?
Honestly, right? 30 years.
He's
celebrating his 30th year.
It's nice that you get to do it while he's here, you know, because you always hear of these buildings being named posthumously.
Right.
What a great way to celebrate the career he's had in Schaumburg.
He's done amazing things for Schaumburg, and he lives and breathes Schaumburg. So it's really, and the arts as well. I mean, he's been a staunch supporter of the Prairie Center since its inception, and we're really, really proud to be able to name it after him because we've had his support for so long.
And what is the history behind the Prairie Center? Because I when I drove up, I did not know what to expect, right? The very first time I was there, maybe 10 years ago, and you know, you see this marquee, and I'm like, oh, where am I? And you get there, and it's such an amazing performance space.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's lovely. It's a 442-seat venue, the theater. It's been around since 1986, and I may have that wrong.
No one's testing you.
No one's testing me.
That's all right. You're not going to get in trouble back at the office.
But it's been around for many, many years. And It's grown a little bit. We've added to it to include lecture space,
right.
Meeting space. It's got a wonderful gallery where the art changes every month. We've got a new artist in there or a group of artists. So it's fun. It's a beautiful setting. Gorgeous grounds with a lovely pond and swans that come during the spring and summer. Sure. And so it's beautiful. It's really, it's a lovely venue. It's a great place to see a performance.
It really is.
There is no bad seat in the house. The acoustics are great. Seats are comfy. It's really a lot of fun.
I may run around into the audience. I haven't decided yet.
That'd be awesome.
Since you told me that I've got a wireless microphone, we don't know what's going to happen. Because you do. You have everything from theatrical performances mm-hmm. to musicians, obviously. You have, as you mentioned, lecturers and things. Like
sure.
This will not be a lecture. Maybe I should start giving out quizzes and stuff.
Well, that'd be interesting.
Paper and pencil. I don't want people to feel panicked when they come see a show. So what has been what have been some of your favorite shows that have come through the Prairie Center?
Oh my gosh.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Well, there's so many.
There won't be any hurt feelings, I promise.
Yeah. I guess what's nearest and dearest to my heart are the youth programs that
sure.
that call the Prairie Center home. Mm-hmm. We've got the Schaumburg Youth Orchestra, which is about 200 members strong. They've been around for many, many years, and they're a phenomenal group. They're award-winning. They've won awards in Illinois. Their director has won awards as well. We also have the Schaumburg Dance Ensemble that performs the Nutcracker every year. We've got Summer Theater that does a summer musical every year.
What was the summer's musical?
This past one was Sweeney Todd.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Went a little dark this year.
You think a little bit. That's little great.
It was amazing. And standing ovations after every show. And it was really a lot of fun. It was a great run.
Do you have kids? You must have so many kids that come back who are this was really what set them on a path, whether it's, staying creative in their lives or maybe they started going and pursuing theater.
Yeah. A lot of that. I mean, there are some who are performing on stage here in Chicago. There are a few who've gone on to Broadway. There's a few out in California. In show business, there are musicians that have gone on. Actually, some musicians who come through the youth orchestra who have kind of come back around and helped to support the orchestra, either through donations or scholarships or even doing... helping with rehearsals, doing some coaching with the young musicians.
Yeah.
So there's really very much a sense of paying it back and paying it forward. And it's really a wonderful thing. So the youth, I think, programs, we also have a film festival every April. Yeah, which is phenomenal. I mean, we get projects from all over the world. So it's really, I don't know, that's the Prairie Center was created and opened to be a community theater, a theater for the community, to support young artists, young talented people in the community, and then also to present the community at large, the greater Schaumburg community, with an eclectic mix of entertainment from season to season. So, for example, you were asking earlier who we have coming
yes.
to the Prairie Center. We've got everybody from the Capitol Steps, as you mentioned, to Larry Yazzie and the Native Pride Dancers.
Okay.
And, Ron Hawking, who has a very strong local following here, who does a lot of Frank Sinatra, Rat Pack type tributes.
Such a great voice.
Yeah, yeah. He's coming. Actually, he'll be here, I think, the week after you.
Okay.
So, there's a lot. Joe Cocker tribute. I mean, those are just the things that are coming up in the next couple of months. And then our Nutcracker performances in December, which those always sell out.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. Multi-generational traditions, to come and attend. It's fun. It's really fun.
It's such a great space. Again, I'll be performing this Saturday. It's a benefit for the Al Larson Prairie Center for the Arts. And the reception begins at 6:30, and then the performance starts at 7:30. And how do people get tickets for this event?
People can get tickets by visiting prairiecenter.org. And you are first on the list there.
Woo-hoo! We let's take a quick break here, and I want to find out more about Teresa and how she got involved with the Prairie Center for the Arts. Again, this performance is the Prairie Center Arts Foundation, and I would love to see everybody out there. I'm going to hang out before and after the show. We've got some fun food, as she mentioned. There's going to be some themed food around my show, including a patty melt. And from where, now what restaurant is it providing the patty melts?
IHOP. IHOP's doing the patty melts.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
You've got Irish roast from McCool's.
Finn McCool's. And then we've got the mini quesadillas from On the Border.
Well, thank you to all those restaurants who are participating in the fun event. This Saturday, Stand Up for the Arts at the Al Larson Prairie Center for the Arts. Again, go to prairiecenter.org. More in just a moment with our guest, Teresa Olivera, on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and I am so thrilled to be performing this Saturday at the Al Larson Prairie Center for the Arts. It's newly named the Al Larson Center for the Prairie Arts, before for the Arts. And joining me in studio is Teresa Olivera, who is the executive director for Prairie Center Arts Foundation. And I want to know, where are you from originally, Teresa?
Wow. I'm originally from Michigan.
Okay. Where in Michigan?
Suburban Detroit.
Uh-huh.
Livonia.
Oh, yeah, I've performed in Livonia. Joey's last comedy stop, I think. Joey, I can't remember the name of it, but Joey's comedy stop was in Livonia.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I performed there in the late 1990s.
Cool.
Yeah.
I was already here by then.
Oh, there you go.
There we go.
What did your family, what kind of work did your family do in Livonia, in Michigan?
Oh, golly, my dad worked, it was kind of a one one parent working household, and my dad worked for the Detroit News.
Really?
His whole entire
journalist or
no? He worked in the where the paper was made and printed and stuff. Yeah, he worked there for
back
years
when people
and
bought
years.
Papers and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah. So he had a background in that. Worked really hard.
Do you still find
his family?
Yeah, I imagine. Do you still find yourself having to pick up the real paper instead of like the digital copies?
I love paper.
Me too.
I do. I really do. Well, I don't like electronic books. I like the feel of paper.
Well, there's a whole study about how a story in a book or on a newspaper, something that's tactile, actually has a more lasting impression than a digital copy.
I believe it.
So I love that your dad was in that business.
Yeah, very cool.
What brought you to Chicago?
My husband.
guy.
Yeah, my husband is born and raised in Chicago, and we met and dated long distance for a couple of years and got married, and I relocated here when we got married and did a few different things, had a couple of kids, and found myself eventually applying to work at the Prairie Center as their box office coordinator. And so I sold tickets at the Prairie Center for years and went back to school and finished my degree and actually qualified for this position, which I am in right now.
So, that's a wonderful journey.
Yeah, it's a fun story.
What degree did you were you completing?
A bachelor's, in nonprofit management.
Oh, there you go. That worked out very well.
Well,
I love that story.
Yeah, it was very fun.
When you started working there in the box office, like what were some of the shows that you remember? Like, because when you're answering the phone and people have all kinds of questions about the performances, you really have to develop a lot of skills when it comes to customer relationships.
Yeah, formed a lot of really good relationships with a lot of our patrons over the years. Many of them are regulars, and you see them, from one week to the next, and you develop relationships with them, which is really that was the funnest part of my job in doing that position was just the people that I got to meet and that I still have relationships with, which is really great.
And it has to have informed you, having been there from that part of it, that side of it. I must inform the job that you do now, making sure that the shows that you bring in, the relationships that you build, whether it's in the community or nationally with publicists and things like that. That's such a well-rounded experience.
It is. It really, I think, my whole career has been customer service related, one way or the other, over the years, and I think it prepared me for this, for this job with the foundation, in that, it is all about building relationships with the people who want to support the arts, and, you know, seeking them out and nurturing them and building these wonderful relationships. So we have really great relationships with many, many businesses in the Schaumburg community that do like to support the community and realize the value of the arts on the economy mm-hmm. in the community and just the betterment. I mean, it's I'm not quite sure how to say it. It builds pride in your community.
You couldn't have said it better.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it really does. So I think people really love having the Prairie Center there, and they appreciate what it brings to Schaumburg and its surrounding communities, I think, because we're this little gem that's kind of a one of a kind, and it's fun.
Well, and I've always been honored to be invited to perform there. I believe this is my fourth time.
I think, yeah.
Performing there. So thank you for, I always get nervous when I go, because it's like especially I performed there with Steve Cochran, and
yes.
hopefully sometime we can come back together.
That'd
or
be great.
Or I'll send Steve, because it's always fun to perform with him, and it's a different kind of show. For those who are wondering about this, I know that you've been getting calls at the box office. What is Patty going to do? I do a combination. It's not strictly stand-up. It's more storytelling and the experiences that my mom and my dad had, you know, coming to sort of this really wild story of how they met. And I love when audiences are like, it's not their story, but they can see familiarity. They can identify.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all relatable, because my whole thing is that what were the chances that my parents would meet? And what were the chances that everyone, you know, like the fact that you're here is by just random circumstances that made parents meet each other and their parents meet each other. So it's kind of, for how many things we get so worked up about, there's always these sort of chance encounters that can change your life.
Mm-hmm.
So I love
Absolutely.
Talking about those things.
Yeah, that's cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a fun event. Again, it's this Saturday. It's a benefit for the L. Larson Prairie Center for the Arts. The reception begins at 6:30. And that's it. Now, is there a good way to explain to folks like how to find, because 201 Schaumburg Court is kind of like, if you miss that marquee, you're going to keep going. And your GPS would be like recalculating route.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, we're located on Schaumburg Road mm-hmm. between Plum Grove Road and Roselle Road.
Okay.
And we're on the south side of the street. And there is a marquee down by the road, and it's now an LED marquee. So it is hard to miss.
Oh, it's harder to miss? It's much
than
brighter?
Than it was back in 2006. So.
Well, that's good to know. I know. Was that the first time I was there? Was 2006?
2006. I went back and looked. And it's funny, because I think you were actually one of the first performers that I remember after I started there.
Yeah.
Because it's been, I've been there like 12 years, so.
It's funny, because when I did that, it was probably Mamacita, Tales of a Diaper Diva.
Might have been.
Yeah, I was talking about being a young mom, and my boys at the time were only 3 and 1. So Declan was, and I was not yet sharing the story of how medically fragile Declan was, because mm-hmm. I hadn't found you can't find funny in that, you need a little bit of distance. And again, that's a lot of the storytelling that goes in. And, you know, people who listen to my show, you know I'm always on the brink of hysteria. So that's why it's called Patty Melt.
Got it.
You never know when that might happen.
This close to a meltdown.
Aren't we all this
yeah.
close?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's really like every moment is kind of like, okay, take a deep breath. I get listeners who get mad at me when I ask them to breathe because they think I'm being condescending. I'm not. I'm worried about your health.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I have to breathe. What do you do when you know that like things are getting sort of heightened, that sort of, okay, I've got to take a step back?
Yeah, I kind of get up and walk a step away.
Yes.
Yeah, kind of walk away, take a little bit of a walk and come back, take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm. Recognizing the moment, I think, is the hardest thing.
That's
hard.
Yeah.
That's the hard part, is go, okay, something's happening. I'm getting worked up.
Before I explode,
yes.
I need to do something.
I'm going to make this much bigger than it needs to be. Yeah. So come, you know what? Live vicariously through me. I'll do a little bit of the hysteria on Saturday
Yay.
Night. We're going to be having a reception at 6:30. There's going to be mini quesadillas from On the Border. We've got mini patty melts from IHOP. Finn McCool's is providing the Irish roasts.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much to those wonderful food establishments for
yes.
making that possible.
Yes.
And I know that this is going to be a lot of fun. My performance begins at 7:30, and tickets are available at prairiecenter.org, or you can call the box office at 847 847- 847-895-3600. Again, that's 847-895-3600. Look forward to seeing everybody on Saturday.
Look forward to having you. Can't wait.
Now go have some fun food in downtown Chicago with your husband, will you?
You got it.
All right, thank you so much.
Thanks,
more after
Patty.
This. Of course. Again, that was Teresa Olvera. And go to their website for their entire lineup for all the shows coming up, including they have Capital Steps. They've got Ron Hawkins is coming up. They've got a Joe Cocker tribute. All kinds of great stuff. And then they've got in the they got the Nutcracker. They will sell out. So if you don't get your tickets early, you're going to be out of luck. More after this on 720 WGN.
Blue lights start a blinking, those handcuffs click. You know who to call, and you better call quick.
Paul,
better call.
Paul.
Fight for your rights when your back's to the wall. Stick it to the man, justice for all.
See, Kristen Lady and Marta Carlo are in awe of what's unfolding before their very eyes. See,
production value.
You need to, it's consistency and, you know, sort of a devotion to the show where you contribute your own segments. You know, you can pitch your own segments, create your own characters. And Paul has his contribution to the show is a segment called What's Paul Eating?
Well, it's just for the record, there I have contributed other segments. This is one.
No,
that was,
this is going to be the one that people remember the most.
This was one we were trying to keep it light one night when it was a very dark day and something we were talking about. So I was like, I come up with something light. And apparently, it's created.
This was the one that Michael liked
base.
The most. Yes. This is a very small fan base, but we do it anyway. By the way, Kristen Lady and I will be at Zany's on Wells September 18th. It is our farewell to the funny females, and always a pleasure to share the stage with you, and glad that you could hang out with us.
Yeah, you as well. That was my first time ever performing at a club, and this is my first time on the radio, so I'm so happy to have so many firsts with you.
Well, it won't be your last. This hopefully this last. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, if you want to, yeah, I don't.
And more importantly, this is your first time playing
What's Paul Eating?
You're right.
So you guys are all contestants.
You better lay down. This is a lot to handle in one day.
Do you have other performances you want to make sure people know about?
Yeah, my mom, my show Mom Jeans is the 20th at Cafe Mustache here in Chicago.
It's an awesome place.
It's a really fun, silly show where we dress as mom characters and act real weird. And then, of course, at Zany's with you. And I've got a bunch of independent shows throughout the rest of the month at KristenLighty.com.
Excellent, Kristen. And how do people spell Lighty?
L-Y-T-I-E.
Excellent. And comedian Mark DiCarlo, Fork in the Road. What?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a show I do with my wife, a podcast on the iTunes.
Well, let's get Paul eating and then
call
Yenny.
Yeah, I want to hear Paul.
Let's have Paul eat and then call Yenny.
So we hear him eat? I don't know. Are we not supposed to look at him while he's doing this?
No, you're not supposed to look, but
I'm not
going to
look.
There's
don't
a double
look.
Secret. So last time there were some questions because people on radio, it doesn't translate well. So we're going to do a control. So this is me eating a potato chip so you can relate.
Because people guess chip on every single thing.
Yeah, so this is an actual chip.
312-981-7200 because we have to complete two things in 6 minutes. You eating and calling Yenny.
Right.
All right, go ahead.
So this is just the chip from Weber Grill earlier. Okay,
all right,
ready?
That's a chip. Okay, so that's
sounds
a chip.
Sounds delicious.
From Weber Grill. That's very specific. So it's not going to be a chip from Weber Grill. It's not going to be a potato chip.
Unless it sounds just like that.
In which case, it might be a chip from Weber Grill.
Okay, so this
312-981-7200. When you know what that is, give us a call.
All right, this
and
is...
you get to eat a Lou Malnati's pizza. 312.
The winner gets a Lou Malnati's pizza.
Yeah, 312-981-7200. Yours is in the green room.
And everyone is going to hear, well, first.
I'm not looking. I'm looking away.
All right, ready? First one.
Don't look.
That's a chip. That's a chip. That's totally a chip.
312-981-7200. What's Paul eating?
We're
not guessing. People are calling in to guess.
You guys guess first.
Dan, no, wait. We're not guessing. We have to get Dan on the line. Dan, what is it? What's Paul eating?
Well, a chip from Weber Grill.
No, that was the first thing. That was a control.
It was a control. Eat,
you didn't, you
eat
want
it
me
again.
To eat it again?
Eat
right,
it again.
Here we go, Dan.
It
sounded the same. Are you ready?
All right, here we go. Go ahead. Why is it blue? Dan,
right, Dan,
what do you
that?
Think? You've got two hints. What he just bit into, and it's blue. Go
it's
ahead.
It's not blue.
It looked like it was blue. What was in your hand that made it look blue?
No, it's not blue.
Let me see.
A Muppet.
Oh, my God. It's not a chip, Dan. And it's not blue. I apologize to everyone
it's
involved.
It's a vegetable.
It is a vegetable. Wow, it smells good. Is that from your garden?
No. I don't even have a... All right, so...
All right, Dan. Do you have another guess before I go to the next caller?
Cucumber.
Ooh!
Well, let's see then. Yeah, it's a cucumber.
It's a cucumber.
It's
what
a
do you
Persian
mean, well?
Cucumber.
What do you mean, well?
It's a Persian cucumber, Dan.
You're,
but
you're
fine.
A Persian cucumber. Shut up.
That's my nickname
Dan,
in high school.
Hold on the line.
Hello, my friend. Bite me.
Is that your Jamie Masada?
Dan has won a gift card to Lou Malnati's, and now I have to text
buddy,
you.
Buddy, we buddy, have a second buddy. Round. Let's see if
another
this
round. All right, another
here's
round.
The
one
second
more round. Okay, good.
All right, here it goes. Right. Ready?
Mm-hmm. Okay, 312-981-7200. What else is Paul eating right
He's a delicate biter.
He's very gentle.
Isn't he?
I'm trying to make it easier.
All right.
You're the hickey king.
All right, Kristen, what was it?
I think it's a carrot.
Okay. Mark, what do you got?
I'm going to say Raisin Bran.
Okay. Patty, do you have a guess?
No, I'm trying to get Yanny Alvarez's phone number.
Okay, we have caller.
Can you bite it again?
Yeah, okay. Esmeralda would
I
like
got
to
in know. Late.
All right, okay. Ready? This is item number two. First one was a cucumber.
Chip.
It's not a chip. It's got a little bit of a smush to it.
That's a good answer.
Esmeralda, what do you think?
Is it a... See, you had cucumber. I was going to say pickle.
Oh, my God. That was correct. It was a pickle.
It was a pickle.
You could have said
well, it's
no
also
for
a cucumber.
Okay, hold on a second. Why are you different. Having everybody guess? Now poor Jerry has to listen to you eat something else because
well,
Jerry
the,
called
the third you. One, this is the third and final. Jerry, are you? Jerry's the last one. Is he going to be it?
Yeah.
Do you have him on the phone?
We do. Jerry, here, hold on a second.
Let's get him online so he can listen.
Jerry, are you ready? Go ahead.
I'm ready.
All right. Here's
nobody else guessed but Jerry. Go
Jerry,
ahead, Jerry,
this is for all the marbles, and it's Dan, too, already won. So, all right, here we go.
Oh, boy. This is the weirdest thing. All right, Jerry, what do you think?
Oh, wow. I'll go carrot.
No, it wasn't a carrot.
It was not a carrot. Sorry, Jerry. Can you, Mark, can you call that number I just texted you? Because we now only have 1 minute to call this.
Oh, no.
To call.
Is it ice cream?
Is it
ice
cream? No. It was a tortilla chip.
It was a tortilla chip?
Yeah.
You can't do chip.
It's a tortilla chip.
No. You know, chips have to be out of your rotation altogether for any...
It's a stupid game. You're cheating.
I thought it was going to be cucumbers now. Some all cucumber related.
You know what? There's always a theme, Esmeralda. You won the second round. Why are you so angry?
Because it's always a chip.
It wasn't a chip. The control
is it a pickle
was,
chip?
Why don't we just call this Paul Eats Chips? And you have to guess what kind of chip.
That's actually not a bad idea.
Oh, is it a Triscuit? Jesus. No, it's a wheat.
All right, we have 1 minute to talk to your lovely wife. Yanny Alvarez joins us.
That'll be plenty. Let's be honest.
Yanny, it's not funny, Marta Carlo. Yanny, how is your family down in Miami?
Oh, my God. They are great. We are very lucky. We are very thankful to be alive. My aunt and uncle, I think they may be allowed back into the Keys tomorrow starting at 7 a.m., but the lines are going to be... starting at Chrome Avenue, which is hours and hours before they can get into the Keys. So everybody else is fine. My parents never lost power. So they're the lucky 20 to 25% of the people in Florida or in Miami that didn't lose power. Everybody else, it's getting it back little by little. Today, workers were sent out starting at 5 a.m. to start fixing everything.
Tell her about the supplies your mom got. On the kitchen table, those two big bottles.
What kind of supplies does she have on the kitchen?
She sends us, her mom sends us a picture.
Cubans make the best of everything. We've been through enough. You know, we were in Cuba, so rolling blackouts were a thing. So, you know, when this whole started, I'm worried, Mom, do you have water? Do you have ice? Do you have food? She's like, yeah, I'm going to send you a picture of my provisions. She sends me a picture with a bottle of tequila. And mix for margaritas.
That's my lady.
And not the little dilettante bottle, like the big jug of tequila.
That's Senora Alvarez.
See.
Stand by. I have to take a quick break here. Yanny, more after this on 720 WGN.